Sport on Highland, brought to you by Michael Murphy Sports and Leisure. Support local and get everything you need this Christmas at michaelmurphysports.ie.
A very good evening. Welcome along to another edition of The Score. Coming up on tonight's programme, I'll be joined by Finn Harps under-19 manager Tommy Canning, who gives us his thoughts on the resumption of the FAI Underage National League. Leon Blanch is on air with his usual predictions ahead of the weekend's fixtures and ahead of the game. Kevin Glendening is the Donegal International Rally PRO. He talks to us about Peter Bryant, the 1978 international winning co-driver, passed away earlier this week. But first, one of Donegal's finest athletes was laid to rest earlier today. The funeral took place in Milford of Hugo Dugan. Hugo enjoyed tremendous success, winning 7 national long jump titles and also won a World Masters in Melbourne, Australia in 1987. Hugo, who is a former member of Cranford, Lifford and Finn Valley AC, was inducted into the Donegal Athletics Hall of Fame in 2017. Coming up shortly, we'll be hearing from Miles Gallagher, former Sunday Sport presenter on Highland, who interviewed Hugo a number of years ago. But first of all, Patsy McGonigal joined me this week to pay tribute to one of Donegal's finest athletes. Well, Patsy, if we look at the amount of tributes that's been paid to Hugo Dugan this week, I suppose it's evident of how highly regarded Hugo was in the county, not just in athletics, but across all sports.
Oh, yes, indeed. I mean, things like community games, soccer and athletics, and just as a community man in Milford, obviously, and a family man. So, you know, he was ingrained in the sporting life for 50, 60 years in Donegal. So, I mean, I'm really pleased. There's just such an outpouring of grief for him because he was a seriously popular man, absolutely.
And Patsy, if we look at the number of athletes that have won national titles over the last 50 or 60 years, Hugo Dugan, of course, was part of the early group who were to take national titles. How important was that one 50 years ago?
Oh, that was massive at the time. And, it's massive now historically, obviously, because, to go down, to me, even things like travelling in those days wasn't an easy peasy, you know. He won his first national senior long jump title in Bantyre in Cork. So you can imagine all those years ago, even getting to Bantyre and then winning the national title on a Sunder track in Bantyre. And, he obviously over a long period of time then, over many years actually, he built on that to that magic seven, number seven, winning 7 long jump titles. That's a rarity in the sport, you know, that people can get to six, seven, eight national titles, because each year, poses a challenge. So, you know, it was a big deal back then, absolutely a big deal back then. Maybe it would have got some serious attention right now. The media weren't as switched on to athletics back then as they are now, but the reality is nobody can take it away from it. It was a great performance.
And he's a man, Patsy, that wore the Irish jersey with pride.
Well, he did, of course, and that was again in itself a big thing. I mean, I got a message yesterday from a fellow in Cork who was on the team with him in Bale in Switzerland, and just talking, he was on the team and he was a triple jumper actually, Sean O'Dwyer, and just making the point that at that time the world record in the long jump was held by a boy called Peter O'Connor, who was an Irishman, and it was the longest standing record on the books, and Hugo was just 8 or 9 inches off that record, and at that time, and in Bale, he was making the point that he thought he could have got it on that particular day, but he just lost his balance on the last jump. But he did jump in at around 7:50 with about a one behind him. But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, he was competing well back then in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, right through the 70s. He was very, very competitive, at national, and he was on the Irish team consistently, you know.
Yeah. You, of course, obviously worked very closely with him, Patsy, during his Finn Valley times, one of a number of clubs that he represented. What kind of character was he? What kind of competitor was he?
Oh, he was a massive competitor. That's what he was. That's what you need in an athlete. We all know this. You know, you can train, but if you haven't got that competitive, that aggression, then it may not work for you. But he had that. he absolutely, and anybody that you talk to that knows the sport and was there at that time would tell you that. And, you know, that's what he was. He was an absolute out-and-out competitor. And, of course, he was part of that, and you related to it earlier. He was part of that Cranford group that came on board with Danny and Paddy Marley and so on, you know, in those early days of Donegal Athletics and in the mid-60s, really. So, I mean, he was part of that. And, you know, went to Dublin, of course, competed with Clonliffe and competed with a number of Donegal clubs, and then ended up with me, and he won his last title, and he won the World Masters, of course. Which was a massive challenge just to get to Melbourne. You know, he had a big family, he had a lot of commitments at home, and fair play to Breach and the family, you know, let him go and let him do it. And it was a massive occasion too when he came home, you know, the celebrations and the joy of this popular Milford man winning a World Master title and at the time, so and jump well, and indeed as a master athlete won British titles as well, obviously, you know. So, you know, he had good pedigree behind him.
Yeah, and obviously a Milford man at heart, and he was hugely influential in starting that club and was one of the founders of the Milford club. And I suppose as athletics developed in the county, Hugo made sure that he was back at his roots, and he sort of looked after his own and made sure that Milford sort of had a base as well, Patsy.
Absolutely, that Mile Park development, I remember me and him talking about it many a time, and the pros and cons of it, you know, bringing soccer, Gaelic and the athletics together, you know. He had a vision that was positive, and, you know, possibly, and I don't know the background, but positively, if you stick the soccer and the Gaelic boys head-to-head for a development, I wouldn't be just putting all my money on that it would work. But basically, in those days, and you're going back 25 years or more, he kind of drove with others in Milford that whole project, which is there now for everybody to see. He was chairman of that project, I understand, and you know, up until this year actually. And of course, he was also very, very, very proactive in community games, both nationally, locally, and countywide. You know, he was very, very involved. He was just a man who enthused people, who encouraged people, who wanted people and a time to chat to young athletes. And you know, that was, people will also remark on that in the last few days as they come to you and talk to you about him. Yeah. So I mean, that was a big thing as well, you know. And also his career, you know, was one of the factors in his life was the Army Athletics, you know, in those early days, you know. And I related to it earlier again, actually, you know, getting from A to B wasn't the easiest thing in the world. But there was a young Army officer came to Milford, Sean Hurley. And he engaged all the Cranford boys and put them into the FCA, whether they wanted to be in it or not. And then they were able to compete in Army Athletics. And, of course, he won many Army titles in those early days. And, indeed, himself, he won the Mulcahy Trophy, the General Mulcahy Trophy, which was the best all-round athlete in the Army. He won that as well. So that's a real biggie in Army Athletics. To have won that, so that was something that people might miss when they go back on his career, that he did win all armies, you know.
Yeah. Just finally, then, inducted into the Donegal Athletics Hall of Fame in recent years as well, Patsy, and I'm sure he would have been very, very proud of that one when his own was looking after him for a change.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We were there that night at Finn Valley when the Donegal County Board gave him the award, and well, it was well deserved. And thankfully, now when we look back, that he got that award, he deserved that award. And of course, another element to his life was that he was on the Donegal team of the century in 2000, you know, in long jump, of course, and relay teams. So, you know, that's it. And he was in a, you know, possibly some people might miss this. He was in a very, 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 very good Cranford team in his early days. They were a very talented group of athletes, and won many, many Cardinal Dalton Shields. The Dalton Shield was the award for the best club in Ulster at that time, and in the Archdiocese of Armagh. And, you know, he would have been a key point scorer for Cranford in those days. And with him and Giles and the rest of the lads, you know, they formed and won so many Ulster titles. And, you know, it's a story in itself, all of that.
Yeah. Patsy, it's going to be missed. A huge influence, of course, on sport in the county. Many thanks for joining us to remember Hugo Dugan.
Thanks, Oisin. Thank you.
Also joining me now to look back on the sporting life of Hugo Dugan is Miles Gallagher, a former presenter here of Sunday Sport on Highland Radio, a former Cranford Athletic Club member and a friend of Hugo Dugan as well. It's a very sad time, Miles.
It certainly is, Oisin. Very, very sad indeed now. And I would just like to maybe take this opportunity to sympathise with his wife, Breed, his family, and indeed the wider circle on the death of Hugo. He was a legend in his own lifetime, really, and anybody that had the good fortune of getting to know him, well, they were better off for it. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, there was a bit of broadcasting in on 2 miles, because he used to do the odd community games report for you.
Oh, he certainly did. He was very dedicated to any job that he took on, and he did a fantastic job for community games in the Milford area, and they hosted the county finals on numerous occasions. But he was PRO for the county as well, and many of the Sunday he reported back from Butlins the good news about Donegal athletes doing so well in the community games. And he had an affection, one would say, and a liking for the younger people like that, to encourage them. He was fantastic at encouraging people. They didn't have to be members of his club or even his community for him to help them out. It was just the way he was, and if he saw how he could help, he certainly did that. And yeah, people appreciated that.
We heard from Patsy a short time ago as we talked about his athletics career and his tremendous achievements, obviously in Melbourne and Australia, and his 7 national long jump titles. But in your piece in the Donegal Democrat today, Miles, you said that Hugo was probably the greatest all-round sportsman Donegal has ever produced. What else was there to Hugo Dugan?
Well, that's a big statement, I suppose, all right. But Hugo, well, we're aware of his 7 national titles and the senior titles. He was second on 4 occasions, and he was third on 3 occasions. And he also spanned from his first senior victory in 1967 to 1984. So a 17-year span. There are not many people that are at the top of their game for that length of time. And it was a number of years later, 3 years later, that he won the World Championship, and he did credit the fact that he had a long life in long jumping, and that he hadn't retired and stopped and then come back for the Masters. He continued on, which was a big benefit to him, he reckons, because he was still competitive all the way through. Now, that's the athletics, and you look, we can go through the amount of stuff that he has won. You know, he competed in decathlons with success. There's 10 events in the decathlon. Again, it's not easy to be fairly good at 10 events. No problem to him. And do you remember when the superstars were on television? They were big, and then there was World Superstar Championships. Pat Spillane represented the country, for example. Well, there were many superstar events here in Donegal, and well, if you beat Hugo Dugan, you were guaranteed to win the event. So that was all types of events. There could be cycling, there could be rowing, and so on. As well as that, we joined Cranford. I'll just tell you how he started in sport. He went on the bar of his bike to the Cranford Sports with his father in 1958. He went down there, he won the boys under 12, he was going to be 12 in October of that year. Then he went away and he won the under 16, this is the 220 yards, there was no 100 then, surprisingly. Maybe the pitch wasn't long enough to do 100, but anyway, they did the 220 and he won that as well. And the next move he made was, he was friendly with Paddy Marley, and Paddy went up to the sports in Drumkeen, and Paddy ran his race and won maybe a couple of races, and he went to do the long jump. Now, there was money at that time for sports, so he went and competed, Paddy, and he said to Hugo, "Sure, go on you now and do a jump there whenever you're here." And what did he do? He won it. And where did he go next? He went to the Ulster Junior Championships and won it, and the next year he was winning national titles. So inbuilt, I suppose, ability, and he found his niche, which was the long jump. Now, he was involved in many other things as well. He played soccer for Ferne United, and certainly won one league title, maybe a couple. He played soccer in Dublin for Telephones United. He represented Donegal in soccer in the Oscar Trainer Trophy, on five occasions. He played rugby with Letterkenny Rugby Football Club. The first game he played was for the thirds, and he scored three tries. He moved up to the seconds, and he finished up playing centre with an Irish international, Ray Finn. Ray Finn was a vet in Milford, so the two of them were a fairly potent centre combination. And he was, as well as that, I asked him, were you involved in any other sport? What about golf? He claimed he wasn't very good at the golf. I've heard since that he was good at it, but he, I suppose he couldn't do everything. He played Gaelic for Mulroy Gaels, and believe it or not, he was in the St. Mary's Pipe Band in Milford that competed back in the day. So many things involved in and excelled in them all. He also had a hobby. His hobby was fishing, and he got, he was so competitive that he represented Ulster on a couple of occasions at interprovincial level. So that's a fairly wide array of sports that not there are not too many would have that.
Not too many would get the time to do all that, Miles.
There's that as well. There is that as well.
There's a lot of stuff in there. Listen, a hugely talented sportsman. Certainly, as you say, one of the best all-round sportsmen that probably Donegal has ever produced. You touched on it at the start, Miles, where he had an affection for bringing young people into sport. Obviously, competing was more important than winning to Hugo Dugan.
That's exactly it was his attitude. That was his attitude for, when it was all over. But while he was competing, there was none more competitive. When the gun went, he was hard to beat, and I suppose that's why he was so successful. But afterwards, well done, and he might even tell some of his competitors maybe how they could improve, even if it's going to beat him, or it didn't really matter. So there are not many like that. I haven't found too many that are encouraging somebody from another club to better yourself.
Yeah. You were part of Cranford with them. Did he encourage you, or did he let you know what you were doing wrong, Miles?
Well, I wasn't. Oh, no. Well, I was. He certainly did. I suppose the first time I met him was in at the Boxing Day road races, as they call it, in Cranford, when they went round the Glen Road in 1969. And yes, the encouragement that he gave to... You felt great speaking with him. There was something about him. He had something there that others just couldn't get across. And you looked up to him as well because of his success, and therefore you tried to do what best you could. And that, all that he achieved, you know, maybe laterally he certainly got encouragement and maybe coaching. But before that, there was no coaching really of long jump. I wasn't around at the time, that a guard from Milford, John Martin, was the first person to help him out in the long jump before he joined Eamon Giles and the Cranford Athletic Club. And they took it from there, I suppose. Mm. So I've heard a story as well that he would go, when he went down to Dublin, he went into Clonliffe Harriers, joined them with Paddy Marley and Frankie McDade and Danny McDade. But he would go to train at night, and there was no coach there to coach him and probably nobody else doing long jump. And what are you doing tonight? And somebody would say, go for a 10-mile run. I'll go with you. Do you know, for a man that was a sprinter, with these fast twitches, 10 miles, it's a marathon. And so he had a range of ability that many others had. And he actually scored in Cranford cross-country teams.
Yeah, sure. Well, listen, I'm sure that's just one, Miles, of hundreds of stories that have been told over the last number of days. Listen, it's a sad week for sport, and particularly down in your area in Cranford and in the Milford area at the passing of Hugo. And we thank you for joining us to remember him today.
No problem at all. It's sad is right, but good to be able to do it. Thanks very much, Oisin.
A former winner of the Donegal International Rally also died this week. Peter Bryant, who was Ari Vatanen's co-driver in 1978, passed away on Tuesday. The crew won the event in the famous Black Beauty Ford Escort RS 1800 42 years ago. Kevin Glendening is PRO of the Donegal International Rally and host of the Crunching Gears podcast. He joined me earlier today to tell us more about Peter Bryant.
Yeah, I think unfortunately Peter passed away there Tuesday. Peter was, I suppose at that time he was seen as like the older, more sensible guy to maybe to be brought on. He was in his mid-30s, probably in the mid-70s, to maybe calm button down a wee bit. And he had a fairly successful career up to that point. But in late 75, he was brought on board with Latin for the RAC rally. But then at 76, they'd done, I think it was 14 events done together. They had 6 ones, 4 all-podiums. And one of them was the Manx in 76. Like an event that a Finnish driver wasn't supposed to be competitive. Like they were great drivers in gravel or whatever, but not really regarded very well in tar. But they won it, beating the likes of, you know, Cahill Curry and guys like that. They were all in their heyday. That was a big, big one for Vatanen at that stage too, you know. Vatanen was off that. He was either winning or crashing. And Brian seemed to bring that sort of a bit more level-headedness to the camp and settle them down and help to develop them into the driver that we all know and love today, you know.
So. Yeah, because Ari Vatanen went on to win the world title in the early 80s, but Peter Bryant was a key part in his development and getting to a level which he could compete at, I suppose, in the top level of the sport, Kevin?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, he took him from, you know, the fast young gun, maybe he was a bit erratic in one thing and all. Like, Peter seemed to be the guy that kind of polished the diamond, took the rough edges off him, got them to the finisher rallies that, you know, it wasn't being fastest in every stage. It was more important to get to the end of the rally, you know. Yeah. And obviously Donegal in 78, that was a big event for Ford. The Mark II had been out since mid-75, very fast and well-developed on gravel, but just didn't seem to be cutting it on the world scene in tar. So Dave Sutton was given the task of bringing a specially prepared car over to Donegal to help develop it. The 3 days, the demanding roads was seen as the ideal test. Yeah. So they come over here and, you know, taking on the likes of Coleman, Fisher, the McCartneys, guys like that, you know, all guys at the top of their game. To come and compete and, you know, beat them guys in that time was very special, you know, so.
Yeah, obviously me and you were very young. Well, I don't know, I was very young. I don't think it was 1978, so I have no recollection of it. And I'm sure you're along the same boat there, Kevin. But
yes,
huge for the Donegal International Rally, 7 years in, to have obviously the Ford boys come in and big names like Vatanen there.
Oh, absolutely. It must have been almost, you know, the likes of getting Ogier or Loeb or whatever now, at that time, that this was this young gun that who was going on to be a future world champion only 3 years later, you know. And Dave Sutton Cars too were regarded as one of the best preparation outfits around that time as well. So it was a huge thing for the club. It had to have been massive for them, like, such a young rally and such a young club,
yep,
to be attracting drivers of this calibre at that stage.
Certainly so, and we've seen the way the Escort then developed over the course of the last 4 decades and what it's turned into now. And the iconic car, the Black Beauty, was here, and we've seen obviously competitors styling their cars around what the Black Beauty was back then, mm-hmm, in 1978, but the Escort's still here, and part of that, I suppose, journey from then to now is all down to Vatanen and Brian, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, like, you talk to a lot of the drivers still in their Mark IIs. You know, they're still strapping themselves in, and that, you know, the guy that inspired that is Ari Vatanen, you know, and Peter obviously was a big part of that as well too, you know. So it's a huge thing, you know. Like, we probably take it for granted, but Donegal played a part in that story as well.
Yeah. Just finally then, Kevin, there hasn't been too much rallying in 2020. How have you found it, or have you managed to get through the year missing the rally balls?
Oh, that's terrible. Like, you know yourself, I love my sport. I just, rallying to me just is a great way of getting out and meeting people and having chats and one thing and another, missing all that. So, you know, with the podcast, I suppose that's helping to take away a wee bit of the edge of it, but it's still, hopefully some stage in 21 we'll get back out and get the smell of racing fuel again.
Yeah, check out the Crunching Gears podcast hosted by the very man, Kevin Glendening. Hopefully we'll have rallying back in 2021. Thanks for joining us, Kevin.
Thank you very much, Ocean. Take care.
Okay, time now to look ahead to some of the big fixtures with his predictions, as he does each and every Thursday. We're going to be joined by Leon Blanche.
Ahead of the game with Leon Blanche in association with Boyle Sports.
We'll start maybe with the cross-channel soccer, the Premier League. First game up this weekend, Leeds United, the new boys in the top flight, taking on West Ham United. On form, Leeds have, had one victory out of their last five. West Ham have picked up 3 wins out of their last five. But Leeds are at home, and it's the sort of game that the Ellen Road side could get something out of.
Oh, absolutely. Leeds have been very good in the Premier League so far this year. Look, all the results haven't gone their way. But I think they've been a breath of fresh air to the league. Patrick Bamford, a lot of people questioned him, his quality. Could he do it in the Premier League? I think he's shown everyone that he's a very, very talented finisher. West Ham, on the other hand, you're right. Going into that Man United game, they'd won 3 out of the last 4. And bar a crazy decision, which the ball was clearly out of bounds from the keeper, which resulted in Manchester United's equaliser. It could have been a different result against the Red Devils for David Moyes. So this is it's a tricky game to call, because both teams will fancy their chances, and this is one where the draw really is a big player, I think. I think both sides have goals in them, but I think the draw is probably the most likely outcome on Friday night.
Speaking of Manchester United, they've got a big derby against Manchester City. Both sides relatively same this season. United have won 6 of their 10. City have won 5. They're separated by just a point. United in 6th and City in 7th. Is this a game we're going to see goals in at Old Trafford at the weekend?
Well, I think, you said something there about Man United won 6 out of 10. But the most important stat out of all that is that 5 of those have been away from home. Their record at Old Trafford has been dreadful this year in the Premier League. And I mean, I'd say if you were Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, even though they got beaten by Leipzig, which was a bit of a shock, I thought he did get the team selection wrong in the first half. But this is a big game for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Man City, they've started to score goals again. Aguero came off the bench, he got on the score sheet. He'll probably be on the bench again for this Manchester derby. But all the pressure is on Solskjaer and United. His time could be running very, very short if this result goes against him. And their home record would worry me. So I think City are going there as worthy favourites. It's not often you ever see Manchester United as big as 16-5, over 3-1 to win at home. But again, I'm going to go with the draw, because it's also a big price at 3-1. City will fancy their chances. United will probably have to go and make City put them under pressure, try and go at them. But if you do that, you do leave yourself susceptible to the counter-attack. So it's a tricky game for Solskjaer. How does he approach it? What type of formation will he choose in this Manchester derby? So for me, a share of the spoils.
Tottenham are, of course, the league leaders on goal difference by 5 from Liverpool. Spurs are going to make the short trip to Selhurst Park to play Crystal Palace. You would expect the leaders to build on I suppose, their goal difference, and it's the sort of game that they could bag quite a few at the weekend, is it?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think if you looked at Spurs in terms of their last 3 fixtures, they had Man City, Chelsea and Arsenal, and they came away with 7 points. So that tells me that they're right up for the fight. They've got a good squad. The players have bought into Mourinho's tactics, and you would fancy Spurs to come away from 3 points, even though it is Selhurst Park, but with not a full house. It's one of the old-style football grounds, and when it's full, when it's bouncing, Palace do buzz off that. The players get a great vibe from their home fans. What will there be? 2,000 fans there. Still a few, but not enough. But Spurs on the road have been good. Mourinho doesn't mind sitting back and waiting to pounce. And when you've got Heung-Min Son and Harry Kane in the form that they're in at the moment, they almost know exactly where each other is going to be. They assist each other. They create chances for each other. They take the chances. So Spurs, for me, yes, they should win. But Palace, it was good to see them score. I think they got 5, wasn't it, against West Brom? Yes, West Brom were down to 10 men, but I think Palace are good enough to score against Spurs, but I do think Jose Mourinho's men will come away with the 3 points.
Yeah. The last of the games we're focusing on in the Premier League is in the bottom half of the table, the bottom third actually. Arsenal, 15th in the standings, one win in the last five, taking on Burnley, who sit third from bottom. Arsenal supporters, of course, cringing at the moment. They're not happy where they are in the league. But I'll tell you what, Leon, if Burnley get some sort of result away to the Gunners at the weekend, things need to change at Arsenal.
Absolutely. I mean, look, the pressure is on. Two massive clubs in the history of English football. We've spoke about Solskjaer and Man U, and now Arteta and Arsenal. It's just not good enough in terms of their Premier League performances. Some of the tame efforts, players not putting in a shift for the jersey. That's the one thing that supporters, you know, it's the least that they can expect. Anyone playing professional football, getting paid a very decent wage, you've got to at least try. You've got to give 100% to the cause. And unfortunately for Arsenal, that hasn't been the case. Sean Dyche, it's been tough for him. He's done one of the best jobs out of any manager in the Premier League for quite some time, because what he's done without any money to keep that side in the Premier League year after year after year, he doesn't get half the credit he deserves. And maybe the likes of a Sean Dyche, for one of the bigger clubs, the so-called bigger clubs, his name should come into the reckoning. Burnley are big at 11-2 against an Arsenal side who are just playing without any confidence. Now, I still think Arsenal, if you want to keep your manager, if you want to put in a performance, Burnley are a nice opposition to play at home. However, I'd be looking at Burnley plus one or plus two goals in this. I think this is going to be a tricky encounter for Arsenal. And I wouldn't be surprised if Burnley come away with at least a draw.
Well, probably the standout game this coming weekend is, of course, the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship final. It's Limerick against Waterford. Limerick won, of course, in 2018. They will be favourites for this one. DC County has waited a long, long time to get their hands on the Liam McCarthy. Is this going to be the year for Waterford, Leon? How's it looking?
Well, I'll tell you what, Oisin, their second half performance against Kilkenny in that semi-final was nothing short of magnificent. They went in, 7 points down, wasn't it, at halftime? And to come back with that level of performance in the second half kind of showed you the hunger. The likes of Tadhg De Burka, Austin Gleeson, standing up to the challenge of not losing another semi-final. And then you've got Limerick, who, to me, they have been the best side so far in the country. I always felt they were going to beat Galway, even though it wasn't a beautiful spectacle, especially the second half. It was very stop-start. It kind of suited Galway to try and stay in with Limerick to play like that. But I felt Limerick were always going to get through to another final. Limerick are favourites, as you said. They're worthy favourites. But Waterford, I think, will give them a really, really good match. There was 4 points separating both of these sides in the Munster final. Now we have a repeat in the All-Ireland final, and I think it's going to be close, but I probably just think Oisin Limerick to win it by 2 or 3. I think it's going to be a close game. I hope Waterford can stick in it. The one thing I do know about Waterford at the moment, having witnessed that second half performance against Kilkenny, even if they're trailing by 5, 6 or 7 points, they're not going to throw the towel in. They're going to keep doing what they do. They're going to keep plugging away. And I'm really looking forward to this Sunday afternoon. It's going to be a fascinating affair.
The Boyle Sports Maestro, Leon Blanche, as always, thanks for joining us on The Score.
All the best, Oisin.
Ahead of the game with Leon Blanche in association with Boyle Sports.
Turning our attention now to soccer. And earlier this week, Minister for Sport Jack Chambers confirmed that the FAI underage national leagues for the under-17 boys and girls and under-19 boys can recommence this coming weekend. It means that the soccer has now been brought into line, with the government's allowance on minor and under-20 inter-county Gaelic games also continuing under certain restrictions. But it means the likes of Finn Harps under-19s can now see out their season. They've one remaining game to take place against Shelburne, and if things go their way, they could possibly have another tie before the end of the year. This week I caught up with the Harps under-19 boys, Tommy Canning. First of all, I asked him, was it a shock that this decision had come, that they were allowed to get back into action?
I suppose it came as a shock, surely, Oisin, because, I mean, by all accounts, we were sure that the thing had been pulled Definitely. You know, it was kind of very final last Thursday when we got the word that it was being pulled. So to hear last night via Twitter, I found out that we were back on and it was being resumed and it was going to be playing to a finish. Certainly came as a surprise, you know.
Yeah.
A welcome surprise, I must add.
Yeah. What were you guys doing in the time in between? What have you been? Because obviously you're on the schedule. You've got two games left to play, so you have. But what have you been doing in the time that you weren't allowed to play football?
Well, we were in the midst of our third pre-season of the calendar year, you know, and that's kind of been the way of it this year. Just in and out of lockdowns and doing pre-season. So we were kind of back and doing another pre-season in preparation at that time for what we thought was our two final games against Derry and Shelburne in the elite section. We had kind of known maybe a fortnight ago that Derry had made a decision to pull their teams out of the National League for the remainder of this season. So we were only then preparing for one game against Shelburne. So we were back in about 4 or 5 weeks getting ready for that, to then be told last Thursday that it's not going to happen. You know, it's very disappointing for the players. Oisín, all of this, I think, has hit the players hardest, particularly the 2001s who are in their last year of under-19 football. You know, and to know that they were only going to get nine games as a minimum, and then for... they lose one with Derry pulling out, and then for it to be cancelled, it was difficult on them. You know, very tough for them.
Yeah, it's sort of difficult in that age group all round, be it in sport and away from sport and in life and school life. It's a testing time for them, so it is, Tommy.
It's a very, very difficult time for young people at the minute, you know, to be going through lockdown and all that brings in terms of isolation. And sometimes I hear people being critical of our youth, and I think, you know, my experience, especially with these boys, has been that if anything, they've been exemplary in how they've carried themselves and how they've behaved, and they understand, these young people understand that health comes first and that life's important, and that football comes somewhere behind that, but nonetheless, for their own physical health, their own mental health, and their own emotional well-being, it's so important that we allow young people to be physically active, obviously in a safe environment, which we've tried to provide it at the academy, you know.
Yeah. Just looking on your performance so far during this disruptive year, 7 games played, 5 wins out of it. Of course, you started in the group stages. What was it, 5 wins, a draw and a defeat so far? As manager, were you content with how the guys were stepping up this year, given all the difficulties that was involved in it, Tommy?
I think, especially given the year that's been in it, you know, when the kind of very stop-start nature to it. We used the winter months within the Ulster Senior League as preparation for the current under-19 squad, and please God, we get that up and running again in the year. We'll do the same again. And so we kind of knew coming into the season that the boys were in a good place in terms of their preparation. And we also were aware that they had a bit of pedigree behind them, because this group of boys did the double at under-17s. So it wasn't a surprise that they had done well. They were in their, because of the restructure, we went on these smaller groups. So we had ourselves, Derry, Longford and Sligo in the initial group. And they won 5 of those, drew with Derry, and the last one won all, you know. So very, very pleased with that. But more pleased with their attitude, their commitment, their dedication to improving, doing well. Quite a few of them were in and out with Ollie over the course of the year, you know, and got their opportunities there. They train with the first team and see what it means to be a professional footballer, because essentially that's what all these young boys dream of, and that's essentially what the academy exists for.
Yeah. You've one more game now left to play. Well, Derry are gone. You were due to have 2. If you are to have a further game after Shelburne, what scenarios have to come into play now to keep you playing football for a few weeks, Tommy?
Probably something miraculous. Oisín, I would think, you know, it would take a big win in Shelburne, which in and of itself is incredibly difficult, you know, and then you would need a result to go your way the other side, where Bowes play Shelburne. Bowes are the team that beat us this year. They have a fantastic outfit, as do Shelburne. You know, William O'Connor's been appointed just recently down there, so it'll be good to see Willie when we go down. But look, we're looking at it that it's a bonus that we've got this game now on Saturday to play. the boys are delighted to be able to go and test themselves against opposition down in Dublin. And well, whatever happens out of that happens, but we'll go and give a good account of ourselves, you know.
Yeah. At times at senior level, there's a gulf there that's very evident between some of the teams around the country, and in particular those when you go up against some of the big Dublin clubs. Is it a bit closer, is it, at under 19 level, do you feel, Tommy?
Not always, Oisín. I mean, when we faced Bohemians up in the Curra this year, they had young lads like Jack Moylan, who has played a number of games, scored maybe for Bohemians' first team at the tail end of the season. They had a young lad, Kelly, who's played a few games at Galway at senior level, you know. And so there's particular clubs, St. Pat's, Shelburne, the same, you know, Shamrock Rovers, that have players that already have senior experience, you know. So there is, but outside of maybe that core, it's pretty much a kind of even playing field.
And obviously you're going to lose a couple of players at the end of the season, but you're going to gain a few as well coming up from the under-17s. But I suppose that's the nature of the process and these underage leagues, Tommy.
The National League, I have to say, Oisín and I have found it to be very, very positive. My experience this year, I was with Harps in 2014 as the under-19 head coach, and the landscape's very different now. The progress even that Finn Harps Academy has made under Kevin McHugh and the coaches that have been there is phenomenal. You know, it's really growing at a rapid pace. A lot of very, very good players within the academy structure. And there's a pathway there now from 13s, 15s, 17s, 19s, and then in the seniors. We're trying kind of to make a kind of extra step in there between 19s and seniors through maybe like an under-23, under-21 type team at Ulster Senior League, because the gap from 19s to seniors is big. You know, it's a difficult step to make, and young players being young players feel that it should be automatic for them, but that's not always the case.
Yeah. Is that far away, do you feel, if it is going to happen?
I don't know. I don't know even if there's plans for that within the FAI, if there's conversations happening within that. I suppose I'm minded back of the days of the A-League and the under-20 league that existed. We have kind of tried to implement it ourselves this year going forward within the Ulster Senior League. It's a good opportunity for us to create our own, if you like, under-23 or under-21 team that gives players at 18, 19 a bit more time to develop, you know, a bit more time within the club, a bit more time where Ollie can continue to see them, a bit more time to kind of make progress, so that jump then on the seniors maybe isn't as big.
Yeah, because that obviously is the ultimate goal. You just want players, homebred players in the county, to be representing their senior club at Finn Harps. This week we've seen the likes of young Patrick McGarvey, the goalkeeper, of course, who has come through all the different age groups and has also represented Ireland between the posts as well. So at the end of the day, that is the goal. You're looking for more Patrick McGarveys to come through and get pro contracts with Harps.
That's essentially the modus operandi of the academy. You know, it's all well and good being involved in the National League, and rightly so. But I guess, you know, you're really going to be judged on how many senior players you produce. Initially, you're looking for the opportunities like Patrick McGarvey has been given. And I think I would stress that's what it is. It's an opportunity. It's not an arrival. He hasn't arrived at his destination. It's an opportunity then to try and kick on another bit, but the lad's well deserving of it. He's put in a hell of a lot of work on top of his own ability, his work rate, dedication, commitment. They've played football is incredible, but I think it's important again that you know, the wider public, football and public, understand that it's not just a natural automatic process that you go through the different age groups and then you're going to play senior football. You know, it's whatever academy you want to look at, whether it's in this country or across the water, that the amounts or the numbers of players that go from the academy into being regular first team senior players is minimal. You know, so there's no reason why Finn Harps would be any different than that. Now, there's other opportunities for young boys that they might go and play in the League of Ireland Division 1, or they might go into the Championship or the League of Ireland, or sorry, the Irish League in the North, or they may go and play intermediate football in the North or Ulster Senior League football with another club, within Donegal or wherever. So it's not always just about who gets into Finn Harp's first team, although that's initially and ideally the goal that we're trying to achieve.
Yeah. Listen, you're in your second stint as in the 19s as manager, as coach. Obviously, you will be back next year. I'm sure you're looking forward to maybe a season that's going to be run off a bit more less disruptive than this year, Tommy.
Please, God, we have something that resembles some sort of normality in society, and obviously that'll reflect itself then in our football, Oisin. And I'm looking forward to continuing to work with the 2002 players that have another year with me at 19. There's some really, really promising young players in there. And then we'll introduce the 2003 players again. There's some great pedigree and some great players in there. And we'll work hard for another year and try and get some of these boys over the line and into Ollie's plans this time next year.
Okay, listen, Tommy, good to talk to you, and we wish you all the best for the future.
Thank you, Oisin.
And that's it for another edition of The Score tonight. If you missed any of the show, you can, of course, recap in the playback section and sports section of HighlandRadio.com. I'll be back with our next bulletin tomorrow morning after the 8:30 news. So until then, as always, enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
Sport on Highland brought to you by MichaelMurphySports.ie. Now stocking the official GAA Donegal snood and face masks.